Welcome one and all back to Rack Addict After Hours, the podcast in a pub right next to a certain, music shop, potentially. This one will be episode 34, as Peter's most kindly written upside down on the corner of our notes for me because I was, I haven't kept track. Just Pete and I today, Pete and Ben. Telmo's gone home for a whole month. He's going to be having a wonderful, wonderful break, but we'll miss him for a few episodes. Pete, it's been quite a while, but there is a summit at home with you.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is.
How is it? How is she? Oh.
It's, I believe it is what I perceived it would be.
Always good.
So, as most people may know, the summit is effectively two peaks.
Mm.
But my suspicion was that there was a certain synergy in the way that the two, the combination of the two synths, that would produce more than the sum total of the, and it's exactly that.
Yeah, it was great when we had one on display in the shop. I just remember that one day before we sort of abandoned the typical retail format, but we were just kind of just having a go, doing some filter sweeps, and it had some magic. It's by Tambrel, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And then it's still the same kind of format of the peak with sort of the animate buttons, the really nice sort of mod matrix in there, and some serious digital oscillators. What else? What else is the kind of magical bit?
Well, it's got some FM that the peak doesn't have. Yeah. So I don't know if that's between the two elements inside. Mm. I mean, it's mainly the layering that it's proving to be quite interesting, and some of the combinations. There's a you can do a split, you can do a layer, and there's another function that I can't remember quite yet. But but there's a lot more to it. I mean, there's a lot more than just having if you had two peaks and a MIDI keyboard controlling them. As I say, there's some magic going on with the combination of the two.
Yeah, nice one. It's something that it sort of slowly crept up on me, and I have a bit of a fondness for it. Have you had to kick anything out of the studio to make space?
I mean, I have got to the point of ridiculousness.
Yeah.
And I stuck the polyevolver into its flight case.
Oh, no.
For now.
For
until
now.
Until the studio gets relocated into a larger room, which is destined to happen. It's going to happen hopefully relatively soon, because now I'm under a lot of pressure now. I just can't... There's no space to do anything now. And all the large pedal train board with all the sort of Digitech and the AS1s and all the pedals, that had to go into its flight case as well. And get sort of. And I'm going to order some more flight cases for some of the Daysmith stuff, for the OB6.
And kind of have a sort of a rolling collection on your Jasper's stands.
Yes, so but when I'm planning that when I move into the new space, which is...
Oh, of course, because you were going into what's now the lounge?
What's now the lounge will become the studio, and what's now the studio will become a kind of slightly smaller lounge. Mm. I don't need that much space. Just enough to get two sofas into the lounge and a large screen TV in there. And that's the lot. So, yes, the lounge will... give me opportunity to spread
more room for activities.
But I'm going to try and restrain. I'm really going to start controlling my synth purchasing, because it's starting to get somewhat ridiculous now. And I always say there's nothing particularly burning on my wish list.
And
at
then
the
something gets announced.
Yes,
in a couple of weeks.
Well, there are items. There are certainly items that I wish to acquire, but they certainly are, they're not that large. I mean, the Typhon that we spoke about a few weeks ago, but we won't be seeing those till end of September.
Yeah, they sold out really fast. Actually, while I'm thinking of the Polyevolver, if our listeners would like to hear that in action, Pete did an incredible set at the Mod Caf. I almost forgot the name of my own synth club. What's going on? The Modular Cafe. If you go to SoundCloud, the Modular Cafe Aldershot, there is a track which I believe is... Yeah, it will be live set Rack Addicts, I believe. And that was Polyevolver and a lot of Big Sky. And it's really, really cool. You should definitely check that out. And while I'm thinking of plugging social media as well, Pete's done an excellent job in getting these podcasts on YouTube as well. And one of the more recent episodes that is now up had the subtitle, Don't Mention the C Word. And we're going to have to mention the C Word today. COVID-19, because some interesting people, German scientists in fact, are doing some experiments. They're planning to get some experiments going, which remind me of an old Mythbusters episode, actually. But we're talking, what would a gig be like now? What kind of implications would that have for the spread of the virus? So we're talking 4,000 pop music fans in a venue. We've got tracking things to see their kind of location and proximity to other people, fluorescent hand gel, and I think they've got some sort of fog machine type stuff just so they can see, you know, where the spread might happen on surfaces between people. So they're doing that as an indoor concert. And even I imagine they'd want people to be tested and free of COVID-19 before they turn up, because surely that's just asking for trouble.
Yeah, I think that's par for the course. They seem to be asking for volunteers between the ages of 18 and 50. And, I it doesn't include me. I'm slightly outside that demographic. But even if I wasn't, I'm not sure if I'd necessarily volunteer for this.
I think I mentioned in previous podcasts, even if I've just been watching a YouTube video or something, and maybe there's two people hugging or there's a crowd, I get a bit jittery.
It's almost obscene to see
people
in too close proximity to each
but
other.
No, I remember you called that really early on. You said it's definitely going to have a lasting impact on everybody's, you know,
social behaviour.
Yeah, and it already has. That's only a little thing, but it's already, I'm uncomfortable in just in crowds. I mean, the high street in our town, I was there today because I had a personal training thing, but it was so busy. It was horrible. I felt so uncomfortable. And my other half went to London for a brunch, and public transport was dead. London was so quiet. And then our little city was just busy as anything, and I just don't want to step out my own front door.
Yes, I've certainly had the similar feelings of being stressed, agitated, and feeling very uncomfortable. I mean, the premise is that they say that any sort of habitual or something that you maintain for up to 6 weeks or so becomes a habit.
Yeah, so. And we've had it already, so it's gonna do some interesting things.
Yes, and it seems to be that the all the information that seems to be coming out at the moment is suggesting that this is a situation that isn't going away anytime soon. So at the outset, and I think we discussed it in the early days of the pandemic, was the fact that, my thoughts were it'd be sort of a, I don't know, 6-8 week lockdown, and then we'd all come springing out and it'd all be sort of not forgotten, but we'd all it would be over. I've never really anticipated initially that it was going to go on, I don't like to say semi-permanently.
Yeah, that is the kind of the worry, and possibly the reality as well. Getting back onto this test concert thing and how horribly uncomfortable it would make either of us if we were there. But yeah, so there's going to be a DIY test kit that everybody has to take 48 hours before they go. And, you know, any kind of negative test, they'll have to go. So, interesting, we've got a mask with an exhalation valve will be given to each concert goer with disinfectant. So hopefully that's going to stop them from catching anything. But I remember the Mythbusters episode, I remember they had, I think, a system where they had a really small, really narrow diameter pipe that was constantly dripping a fluorescent kind of chemical into somebody's kind of mouth. And they hosted a kind of fake dinner party, and that person who had the kind of drip situation was like they had a cold, so they sort of went through with a black light later to see how many people were covered in this fluorescent stuff. I think the test was the elbow cover, using a tissue or just nothing at all, just sneezing into the open and to see which spread viruses or any kind of germs more, which is quite interesting. But yeah, it's that same fluorescent kind of dye, and just not even thinking about any of the kind of science or anything. All I can imagine is the entire venue is just going to be horribly fluorescent and glowing when they go back round later. I can't imagine it's going to go well.
Be like a crime scene, right?
It will. It's like they're sort of going for this experiment to see, you know, how might the virus spread in large crowds, indoor locations, all this kind of stuff. And surely it's guaranteed to be a disaster.
I don't know. I mean, at some point we've got to try and endeavour to get back to a reasonably normal type of life, even if this virus is still endemic in the population, which it sounds as though I heard a statement at the weekend that basically said that it's now a human disease.
Mm.
Now it's made the jump, obviously, that it's infected humans, but it's now permanently a human disease. And even though there might be vaccines, it still won't eradicate it. There's still going to be outbreaks because the vaccines won't go everywhere. There's still quite a growing part of the population that have already stated that they won't take the vaccine because...
Your usual usual arguments that nobody likes to listen to.
Well, I mean, it's difficult. It's the issue of the internet. It tends to spread these things further than it would be. I mean, certain beliefs that would have been sort of withheld within a small group now can sort of spread themselves, so to speak, like a virus.
Yeah. Oh, man. Too many.
But there is so much of various... countries' economies are centred around mass gatherings and entertainment.
Yeah, of course.
It's certainly a big part of the UK economy. And unless we find a way back, and I see this as certainly a part of it, actually understanding, because they've certainly suggested that some of the large events were prime for spreading it in the early days, these super spreader events.
Yeah.
Other than the sort of the other vector was inside small family groups, inside the sort of family abodes. But yes, so in some respects it'll be interesting to see what the outcome of this will be. I'm surprised they're allowed to carry it out in the first place, to be honest.
Yeah, it's. I suppose all because it's for science, does that give them kind of a license to just, you know, go for it?
It seems as though they're taking all precautions. If everyone's been tested prior to the concert, and does it say they're wearing masks?
Yeah, they were given special masks that had, they said, an exhalation valve, which I guess means something. I don't know. I have no idea what an exhalation valve is.
Although they're small, you see some masks have got these small diaphragms in them, and it's like a little bladder.
So does it mean... I suppose it might control which way kind of the air goes. So if you're breathing in, maybe it comes around the edges.
Well, those type of masks tend to protect the wearer, but not necessarily anyone else.
Oh, right.
So, there was a medical practitioner I was listening to a week or so ago that was suggesting, because masks became a thing in the UK, not to say they weren't a thing, but they became a legal thing.
Yeah.
Was it just last Friday on the 24th?
Yeah, very recently.
And he was suggesting that one shouldn't buy a mask with a valve in it because it may be okay for you, but you'll be squirting these jets of potentially viral loads in all directions. Yeah. But I think for the purposes that they want, they allude to the smoke machines, I think they want to see sort of how these things are aerosoling and circulating, and that's part of the experimentation. It's certainly, and I've certainly not heard of the artist.
Neither.
Tim, how do you pronounce that?
Let's give it a go. What we got? Oh, I'm on the wrong page. We've got, that'll be a Tim Bentzko. I'm probably butchered that, but, you know, Bendzko. German, German experiment, likely a German artist.
One that hasn't reached my ears.
Not at all. I mean, anything that's vaguely in the pop sector, I tend to kind of run away in the opposite direction from, just on principle, even though that may limit me from being exposed to potentially fantastic music. So there's actually an interesting bit on the end of this one about the kind of social distancing or physical distancing, which would be more accurate, things that they're going to be doing in the venue. There's only a few entrances, They're trying to get less mingling in sort of bar areas and things. Every second seat is going to be blocked and all this kind of stuff. They've got to imagine how they can extrapolate these measures up to larger venues.
Okay, so that infers it's a seated...
Well, at least there will be some seats, you know, partially seated, partially standing. We'll have to see. That's the things. If it's most of the gigs I go to tend to be kind of metal type things. And, you know, it's going to 1.5 meters. You'd be lucky to get 1.5 centimeters half the time. So, I can't see a lot of those coming back.
Maybe we've seen
I'm thinking about a seated metal show. That'd be bizarre. You're getting everyone's feeling all rowdy and they just kind of sat there a little polite. Oh, yes. So I do enjoy that polyrhythm and the screaming.
Small sort of head-banging tilt of the head. Sort of.
Yeah. Actually, the first metal show I went to was Devin Townsend, Periphery, and Shining from Norway. And I actually did manage to pull several muscles in my neck from the head-banging. It was good fun, though. Yeah, so we'll see what happens with this experiment. I can only imagine the findings will be it's pretty damn a bad idea to get this many people inside in this kind of environment. I know there's that the UK government has a roadmap for opening up artsy venues, and it's all rehearsals only, then performances for broadcast only. And then, you know, really, really small audiences spaced very far apart. And, you know, I mean, how can you make enough money on tickets for that to even be worth it?
Yeah, I think that's where the problem is. They're not being able to get the audience densities that they require to make the performances viable.
Yeah, if you could get the testing up, then I think you can get a lot of this kind of stuff working better, provide evidence of a test from the last week or however.
Or if they could get some really inexpensive, very fast acting test.
Like a little spit thing or something.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty good.
Some way of some sort of... I mean, they have discussed some sort of passport system. That desire was extinguished by sort of how things transpired. There were so many things in the early days of the epidemic that's, you know, we were going to get this, we were going to get that. And then we were sort of slowly disavowed of all those bits and pieces as we went ahead.
So it just keeps changing so fast. Anyway, I'm sure you're sick of hearing the C word. We are too. But, you know, this one is quite interesting given that it does fall into our music area. And I really have missed gigs. So hopefully we can... Hopefully we can go to one eventually.
Plus
I do have those tickets to Genesis, which has been postponed, but I need that to happen, and I'm really worried because they're all so old. What if they bite the biscuit before the show? It sounds so bad, but I'm worried.
Well, I mean, as you're most probably aware, I used to be quite a fan of Yes, not so much these days, and already, unfortunately, Chris Squire, who's...
The bassist.
I think he was one of the founding members. Oh, yeah. It was kind of regarded as his band, and he unfortunately passed away... I want to say about 5 years ago, maybe longer.
I think it was more recent than that, because I remember it being in the news.
Yeah, I'll have
anyway,
to look it up.
Yeah,
certainly. But, they are getting into that sort of area. There was the gentleman, one of the founders of Fleetwood Mac, unfortunately passed away just a few days ago. So, I would say Genesis are almost of the same generation.
Just a tad younger maybe, but I saw Phil on his more recent tour, the Not Dead Yet tour.
Oh yeah, that says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, and he walked out on stage with his cane, and he was walking so slowly, and I was he's so old. He's not actually that old, but he just looks it. He was really showing his age. He still sounds great, but it was worrying. Anyway, I think it's going to be time for our YouTube recommendations.
Before we jump into that, we've got just something from Pete. I've come bearing gifts.
He has. Oh my! This is live. I'm going to have to do one of those YouTubers react videos. Oh, he's got loads of Xbox games for me. What a hit! Oh man, there's so many. Oh, he's got the good Fallout 3, Borderlands 2, Halo Reach. Oh, Fable. I've never played Fable. Apparently it's amazing. Dead Island. Oh, what a gut. Fallout New Vegas. One of my favourite games of all time.
I would check them. They're not all.
I never finished.
They're not always.
That is.
Oh, it's there. It's there. Some, there was one that is Defiance. In the wrong box.
Borderlands 1. FIFA 12.
I think it's one of the Borderlands.
Red Dead Redemption. Undead Nightmare. I have never heard of that. But that is incredibly kind of you. Thank you, Pete.
No problem.
Oh, man. I've got some homework to do now. Oh, man. New Vegas. Actually, I'll tell the story about New Vegas. If you're not familiar with the Fallout series, we're talking post-apocalyptic America. And, you know, factions. It's an RPG. Kind of design your character. You know, usual kind of stuff. I first played this when I was in school. I went to a friend's house in France, I think, for a holiday. And when his parents went to sleep, we snuck out of our rooms in the dead of night to play Fallout New Vegas until sort of 3 o'clock in the morning. And we'd sneak back into bed. Hopefully they wouldn't catch us. I have such good memories of that particular holiday. Fallout New Vegas will always have a soft spot for me. Is that... Oh. Pete, you absolute legend. Thank you so much. Ooh, where do I start? That's gonna be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 whole games. What a guy!
No problem. Most welcome.
Too kind indeed. I can see you're scrolling through your YouTube feed. I'll give you a little bit more time because I have actually found mine already. And we're getting to that point where we've got to hope that we haven't already recommended them because we've done quite a few. But the one that I'm going to recommend today is Clickspring, which, if you're into watches and clocks and things, as far as I'm aware, that is actually a component from a clock. Might be involved in the movement of the second hand. I don't really know. But this guy is an Australian gent who does a lot of sort of machining of really fine parts, a lot of brass work for clocks, clockwork mechanisms, and he makes a lot of tools related to such a pursuit. Oh my! So he's got a lot of videos about this kind of stuff, and he's got a really long kind of ongoing project where he's making a replica, working replica of the Antikythera mechanism. Antikythera. That's the one, Antikythera mechanism. And he's going through all the history of it and how they historically it might have actually been made, how they might have hand cut the teeth on these giant kind of cogs.
I think for our audience, potentially it might be worthwhile you expand and tell them
would.
What the Antikythera mechanism is.
I'm going to blabber for a bit while I try and simultaneously Google a definition of the thing. But yeah, so we're talking kind of clockwork, home machining shop stuff. He has a really great kind of narration style. He goes into a lot of detail and it's just really... really engaging to watch. I have no experience in, I used a lathe once, but no experience in or really interest in that kind of stuff. But as we've said many times before, it's a real pleasure being able to watch these craftsmen with incredible experience and skill just sharing it on YouTube. So the Antikythera mechanism is an ancient hand-powered Greek analog computer. So we're talking again clockwork. And it's used, or it was used, to predict astronomical stuff, positions of eclipses and dates for astrological events, and a four-year cycle for the Olympics. And obviously the remains were found, and they've been able to see, how much incredible sort of engineering power the ancient Greeks had. And this was discovered in 1901. And it's just fascinating. But he goes through little bites of the history and what all the sub-assemblies do and all this per episode. Really engaging watch. Clickspring. Pete, what have you got for us?
Right, my suggestion for this week, the channel's name is Professor Simon Holland.
Why does that ring a bell?
I don't know.
Ah.
But I have to say, initially, he's not a professor.
Okay.
What I believe he is, used to be, I assume he's potentially retired. He lives in France, I believe, and he worked in TV editing science documentaries.
Mm.
So I think that's his background, is a film editor. But he's got a little channel, which, as I say, is titled Professor Simon Holland, and he kind of is culturing the sort of nutty professor type of image. He's got sort of wild white hair and beard. And
the classic image.
Yeah, he's got that kind of classic Nutty Professor look to him. And he sort of skates around the sort of edges of not so much conspiracies. Well, to a degree, conspiracies, a bit of UFO, a bit of this and a bit of that. But he doesn't sort of make them any worse, let's say. You know, he doesn't inflame the conspiracies. He tends to just talk about them and sort of open them up for discussion. And then he'll do something, and he sort of has goats and a little, I think they've got a little small holding in somewhere in the south of France, as I say. And or he'll just go for a little sort of ride around the local area where it's all very kind of very picturesque. Sort of, he's got a strange one of these. I don't know if you see these sort of large, chunky push bikes that almost look like motorcycles with the big tyres.
Yeah, well, they're called fat bikes.
Yes,
really big plus tyres. You can ride them on the snow.
So he's going around in that. But yeah, so he's quite wild. I'll let you have a little look at him.
Have a quick. Oh yeah, no, I've totally seen these thumbnails before. How to find life on Mars, Prof. Simon. Yeah, these look really cool.
Yeah, so they're quite entertaining. And then again, they're not too long. They're not tiring. It's something you can dip in and out of.
Yeah.
And I'll have sort of a little dabble on his channel, so to speak, occasionally when the need takes me, so to speak. Yeah. But so that's my this week's recommendation, Professor Simon Holland.
Lovely stuff.
Who's not a professor?
Oh, yeah, who's not a professor. Well, thank you very much for listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. As you now should know, we're available on YouTube and pretty much every podcasting service you care to shake a stick at. Rack Addicts UK, Rack Addicts After Hours, that's where you can find us. Thank you very much for listening. You'll be able to catch us next week. Stay safe, stay curious potentially as well. That's always fun for learning yourself some new things. We'll see you next time. Bye.